Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, here we are again on Connecting Faith. It's good to have you tuned in today. Hope that you're having a great week so far, adjusting to March. Was it the lion or lamb?
A little bit of both, I think, in the first week.
Okay. I haven't quite decided, so we just know that it's more daylight hours, right? By the end of the month, it'll be more daylight than now. So, and we're going to hopefully see some daylight today in our conversation with a good friend and welcoming back Dr. Mark Laser. We'll introduce him in just a moment. I want to say congratulations to Emily Johnson from Columbia, South Carolina. She is February's winner for the David Jeremiah Study Bible.
Congratulations.
You know, Susie Larson was at a women's conference in South Carolina here a few weeks ago.
Featured speaker there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there are a number of people that are listening online, listening to Live the Promise and some of the other Faith Radio programs. So Emily apparently signed up, so congratulations to her. By the way, we are giving away that study Bible one a month, and you can simply sign up online at myfaithradio.com. It's a comprehensive study Bible packed with features specifically focused on helping you discover what Scripture says, what Scripture means, and what Scripture means to you. And love to have you win a copy here at the end of this month. So you can sign up today, myfaithradio.com. And if you want to jump into the Commit to Live Fit, still opportunity to do that as well. And just a quick reminder, too, we mentioned yesterday that we've added a new program, Pastor Rick Warren and Daily Hope on weeknights at 6 now. So I'm just going to make a point to listen to some relevant Bible preaching.
So catch Faith Radio highlights at 5:30, Zacharias, and then Rick Warren. Good.
Well, I hope that you can stick around for today's program, and we're going to have frank discussion today, and so that may be just a warning for you, I suppose, if you have young children in the house. We're going to talk particularly about living a life faithful and true, and that is really at the heartbeat of Dr. Mark Laser, who has for many years been directing the ministry by that same title, Faithful and True. He's host of the Men of Valor program, Faithful and True's online radio show. He's a nationally recognized leading authority in the field of sexual addiction with nearly 30 years of recovery experience. Mark has written a dozen books on the subject of sexual addiction, including his groundbreaking book, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, which was re-released here a few years ago, updated, and we're going to focus on that. And there's also his three-book Men of Valor series, and we are honored to have him with us today. He and his wife, Debbie, have also written Seven Desires, Looking Past What Separates Us and Learn What Connects Us. And we're going to talk today about healing the wounds of sexual addiction and how we can remain living faithful and true in today's challenging world. So, Mark, welcome to back to Connecting Faith.
Well, it's great to be with you again, Neil. You've always been a great friend to our ministry, and it's just a honor to be on your show, so thanks for having me.
Maybe just in terms of some general discussion, I mean, this is, as we mentioned in the introduction, you've had, you know, about three decades in this recovery work dealing with this area. This, the whole area of misuse of sexuality has certainly increased, hasn't it, over the decades?
Oh, it's just escalated. I think a lot of the experts in our field are using terms like epidemic, tsunami, moral depravity of culture is just overtaking us. You know, since I got involved in the field because of my own recovery, as you know, Neil, back in 1987, the major escalator, I think, of this has been the internet, which, as we know, we can use for so many good purposes, like even people in South Carolina listening to your show. But at the same time, you know, organized crime got a hold of the internet very early on, and the sex for sale industry and pornography has just been rampant. And the result of that has been that so many men are getting caught up in it. And I think the saddest part of it, of the escalation, has been the increased number of women who are these days lost in pornography and other forms of sexual sin. You know, the most recent evidence of that is the popularity of this totally depraved movie, Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yeah, we Don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on that, except that it just is a reminder that there seems to be this fascination, and I guess we can get into right. that, you know, sort of the issues. You know, what do we really want, and what, you know, there's the addiction is just what a symptom of something deeper underneath, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, Neil. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, any addiction, whether it's, you know, alcoholism, eating disorder, gambling addiction, sexual addiction is a symptom of a deep longing in the soul for something that only Christ can fill. So, you know, those of us that have, you know, had to seek recovery, myself included, I mean, we have had to really get more in touch with surrendering all of our life to Christ. Because until such time as we're able to find fulfillment in the Lord, we're going to seek what we call, you know, false solutions, or what some in our field have called false idols. And the very idea that there are ways to meet these deep soul desires through sexual arousal is just, you know, one of the major lies that's currently out there in our culture.
In your book, as I was looking through it again, it just several questions came to mind, and one of them is the issue of childhood. Is sexual addiction always linked to childhood?
We used to think that, Neil. When I first wrote that book in roughly 91, 92, it was pretty much thought that, you know, the average guy that was struggling with this diagnosis had experienced a fair amount of dysfunction in their family to the point of, you know, fairly high percentages of abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. And, you know, by fairly high percentages, you know, the early study that was done actually in 1989 was that of a group of 2,000 men, 81% of them had been sexually abused in childhood. So we used to teach that a lot, but going back to one of our earlier themes here, that I do think that what's happened in the last 20 years is that the availability of sexuality that's so prevalent has introduced a lot of people into this that don't necessarily have those same kinds of histories in their childhood. So I think I would no longer say that, you know, if you're struggling with this kind of sexual sin or addiction, you had to have a problematic childhood. That's not always the case.
I do want to just say, if this is an area that maybe you have struggled with, or there's someone in your family, someone that you know and care about is struggling, and you'd like to get some answers, our guest today, Dr. Mark Laser, has wise insight and counsel, and we'd love to talk with you today, and you can certainly remain anonymous, but we'd love to have you give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484, or if it's more convenient, easier for you, just drop us a note. You can do that via email. If you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there, and please send us your question or your concern, and we'd love to be able to talk about it today. One of the things that you reminded us in this book, again, that's been out some time, but it certainly has a great truth to it, is that, you know, life itself seems to become almost, you know, a pornography for someone who is truly sexually addicted. I mean, just sort of anything and everything sends them down a sexual path. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, basically, Neil, if you've, you know, grown up and developed a real, what we actually call tolerance to sexuality, then your appetite for sexuality is going to increase. Just like an alcoholic gets tolerant to alcohol. So now, you know, a couple of beers don't get you drunk anymore. Now you need a six-pack. You know, the average guy that's really struggling with addiction is going to be out there in culture. And it's like they develop radar for every kind of possible sexual stimulus that's out there. And so even the most common ordinary things can become, you know, sexually triggering to them. We were having a conversation about this in one of our men's groups. And, you know, the men that are really struggling with this, I mean, they can even go to church and, you know, see, you know, women that are basically very appropriately dressed, but, you know, they become stimuli to them. You can watch, you know, everyday ordinary shows on television, and you know, the variety of different kinds of things there might be triggering to you. Basically, the answer is you develop a much keener awareness for what is really out there and, of course, quite prevalent in our current culture.
Which I guess, again, there's a lot more been done in terms of brain science and all those things that, you know, we really kind of rewire our brains many times if we're getting wrapped up in some sort of sexual addiction behavior.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that excites me so much. You know, one of the things that I just am thrilled about is that when modern science comes along to confirm the truth of the Bible. So, you know, Paul wrote about in Romans. First of all, in the first chapter of Romans, he has a whole lot to say about the moral depravity of the Roman culture. But then finally in chapter 12, he says, don't be conformed to the ways of this world, but be renewed by the transformation of your mind, he says. So, yeah, it's true. Neuroscience has proven to us that, you know, if you get involved in a repetitive pattern of behavior, it does, in fact, create neurological connections, pathways in the brain, so that the brain literally gets wired in ways to be more dependent on those kinds of behaviors. But now the good news is that Paul was right. One of my favorite neuroscientific words is the word neuroplasticity, which means that the brain can be transformed. It can be changed. And the way we change the brain is to get involved in healthy behaviors. So those new healthy behaviors can also, strangely enough, form neurological connections in the brain. And those new healthy connections can, in fact, override the old ones. So it's literally true that you can change your brain. And spiritual disciplines, spiritual practices, spiritual community is all definitely a part of that. And we don't have to be dependent on this or addicted to this for the rest of our life, because brain change is possible.
And maybe just before we go to break, just, you know, take another minute to just encourage someone today who may be just wondering, is there any hope in this for me or my spouse or child or whatever it might be?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a satanic lie to believe that there's never hope. I mean, God has, designed the brain in such a way that while you can feel totally dependent, you can feel totally out of control. You're not powerless in that way. You can make a decision to get honest, to get open, to find support and community. And there definitely is a way of escape.
We're going to talk more about finding that way of escape, the hope that we have about leading a life faithful and true. Mark Laser is president and director of Faithful and True and host of the Men of Valor podcast radio show. He's also written several books, including Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, one that we're referencing today. We have a couple of copies of Mark's books, and you're welcome to call in and sign up for those. We'll do the drawing at the end of the hour, as always. And more importantly, if you have a question or a concern that you'd like to raise, and again, you're welcome to be anonymous, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Or drop us a note through email, myfaithradio.com. On the Connecting Faith show page, there's an email link, and we'll take your questions and comments coming up in a moment with Dr. Mark Laser. Of I always tried to kind of remember and hang on to and remind myself of from Psalm 101. David says, I will walk in my house with the blameless heart. I will set before my eyes no vile thing. Might be a verse worth memorizing, Psalm 101. Dr. Mark Laser with us today, president and director of Faithful and True and host of the Men of Valor program, Faithful and True's online radio show. And he's a recognized expert and authority in the field of sexual addiction. Written several books, including Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction and more. Also has a great seminar called The Fight of Your Life. In fact, a new book that's coming out. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Do want to get to our calls and comments. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Anonymous caller on line one has a question about some warning signs for kids. Go ahead. You're on with Mark Laser.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering if you could please talk a little bit about the warning signs or symptoms, if you would, of children that have been exposed to sexual perversion, pornography, or the like. And maybe kind of, you know, go over a little bit for us what we can look for and how we can help, if there are some proactive things that we can do to intercede on behalf of children, and just kind of questions we could maybe ask, or what do you think?
Well, it's a great question, and I'm always really excited when I hear a mother calling in about these kinds of things. So many of the men that I work with who are, you know, struggling with pornography or worse, they're longing for, like we were talking about earlier, a relationship with God. And they're also just longing for connection, community, and for conversation. So I'm starting with the back half of your question, which is, you know, what can parents do? And the number one thing that parents can do is to have conversations with kids about sexuality in general and what's out there in our culture, and not have it be, you know, a punitive conversation or a kind of a negative conversation. One of the things I've learned over the last 25 years is that if all we ever talk about with our kids is the things that they should not do, they tend to, you know, get an attitude about rebellion and about experimentation. So, you know, I've always said that if a mother was willing to talk to a son, for example, I mean, that is an absolutely preventive thing. I'm not trying to dispromote books and stuff, but I do have a book that I wrote back in the late 90s called Talking to Your Kids About Sex. And the subtitle I've always liked, it's A Lifetime of Conversations. But what I'm saying is a conversation is the main thing. I think some of the warning signs are basically electronic, meaning that our kids these days have access to computers in school, and they have their access to, you know, iPads and phones and stuff like that. And I think if parents should really consider it as part of their job to, you know, be monitoring what the kids are looking at, what the kids are doing, and also monitor search histories. I would say another warning sign, and we see it all the time, is that when a kid comes back from school or from a sleepover or from a birthday party or whatever, and he seems kind of distant or confused or kind of just wants to isolate, it could be because, you know, his peer group has exposed him to some things. And the age this is happening is decreasing. So, you know, we're starting to see kids that are getting exposed to this by their peer groups at age 8, 9, 10 these days. So I think basically if you're having a conversation with a child at the end of a school day and you say, how was school today? And he says, fine, and then goes up to his room. You know, I wouldn't trust that. You know, I would try to have a lengthier conversation. You know, part of my longer answer to this is that if parents are really open to engaging their children in conversation on a regular basis, ask them for their highs and lows during the day and stuff like that, I think kids are more willing to talk about these things than we give them credit for. But be of good faith, even if a kid has been exposed to this stuff. You know, if he gets good conversation, good teaching, it doesn't mean that it's going to lead to a life of addiction.
It was interesting, though, and thank you for that call. And our maybe Mark, at the end of the show, let's just take a minute to sort of pray for all those who connect with us today, and just that are,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
you know, feeling that that burden, that concern. But one of the things that caught my attention in your book, Healing the Wounds of Sensual Addiction, you were talking about addictions and say, you know, not everybody, of course, that is exposed to porn is going to become an addict, but it said sex addicts come from families in which there is at least one other addict present.
Right.
Tell me about that statement. That seems kind of shocking to me.
Well, it is shocking. When I first heard it, it was kind of discouraging. But if you look at there's several times in the Old Testament where this teaching is present. The one that I always refer to is in Exodus 20, where it talks about the fact that the sins of the father are passed down to the third and fourth generation. So, you know, we know that that's a dynamic. And so should it shock us as much to know that if we've got a person struggling with sin, we might suspect that there was sin in a previous generation. So now, the statement in my book was based on a research study that was conducted with a very, very large group of addicts. And in doing the background on their families, it was always the case that they had at least one person in the previous generation, a mother, a father, sometimes both, unfortunately, that were struggling, not necessarily with sexual addiction, could be alcoholism, could be gambling, could be one of the more commonly acceptable addictions, which is work addiction. But the principle there is that the family energy is teaching a child that we cope. You know, we don't talk about honest issues. We don't talk about our feelings and emotions in open ways. We cope. You know, we eat. We smoke cigarettes. I don't. You know, in my family, when I was growing up in the 50s, and my dad was a pastor. I mean, on a nightly basis, we were watching TV. We were eating a lot of food. We were inhaling my dad's secondhand smoke, and my dad always had lots of sexual humor. So, you know, as I came to find out much later, my dad struggled with several different addictions. And then as I got to, you know, thinking about my grandparents' generation, I mean, I can trace addiction back in my family, the three generations that I know about. So now, the good news in Exodus 20, of course, is for those listening, is that, you know, God promises us that if we repent and turn to his ways, we can break this generational curse or cycle. And God promises us, and I love this, that, you know, if we are the ones who are breaking that cycle, then he will bless that for 1,000 generations. So, you know, isn't that a pretty good investment? I think, so, you know, and be of good courage. If you can change this cycle, you know, that can be a blessing to just a whole lot of future generations.
Yeah, what if all those listening today, if we could commit to saying we're going to be cycle breakers in this area and really transform our homes and in eventually our communities? We're talking about issues of sexual addiction with Dr. Mark Laser, President Director of Faithful and True and the host of the Men of Valor program. It's Faithful and True's online radio show. And is it faithfulandtrue.org? Or
faithfulandtrue.com, believe it or not.
All right, yeah. faithfulandtrue.com. Check that resource out for a number of great opportunities for you to get some help and more hope. We're going to talk more with Mark in just a moment. He's, as you've heard, shared openly about his past experience. And there is hope. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk more about that and get to some issues about treatment and strategies and some lessons even from the book of Nehemiah. Love to have you join the conversation. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or you can email your question. We've got one of those standing by at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. So we'll get to your calls and emails coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. Past the hour and talking today about issues of sexual addiction and hope for recovery. I'm talking about how do we lead a life that is faithful and true to God's call in our life. Dr. Mark Laser hosts the Men of Valor program. It's Faithful and True's online radio show. He's the president director of Faithful and True. He's authored a dozen books or more on the subject of sexual addiction, been working this field and counseling and giving hope and insight for nearly three decades, and we're honored to have him with us back on Connecting Faith. We go to line two. Tech is calling in from St. Paul with a good question for Mark. Go ahead, Tech. You're on with Mark.
Hi, Mark. My question was, could being involved or seeing or being exposed to, even involuntarily sometimes, to sexual perversity or things that are not in accord to God's will for sex, could that cause, like, demonic oppression or possession?
Well, where did the exposure to that stuff come from in the first place? You know, I think Satan's oppression around sexuality started happening in the Garden of Eden, you know, when, you know, the fall happened, and before that, Adam and Eve had been naked and not ashamed. So, yes, I definitely think that Satan hates sexual purity. He hates God's plan for marriage. He's going to come against that every chance he gets. I was just talking to my co-author in this new book we've got coming out, and we just prayed together on the phone this morning because we know that, you know, Satan doesn't want this new book out there. And it's been amazing, you know, how many little hurdles we've had to get over that Satan continues to throw up there. But, you know, we're confident in the fact that God wants this book out there. And so, you know, we know that that's eventually going to be the result. But I see it all the time. You know, I've learned in my own recovery, and I've been sober now for going on 28 years, that, you know, just when I think that I get more confident about the fact that, you know, I'm done, you know, well, then I need to remember that I'm still a man. And, you know, Satan hates the fact that, you know, I teach and write about some of the things I do. So I'm just as vulnerable as everybody else. So, yes, I do believe that this is a matter of satanic attack and oppression.
Which leads us perhaps nicely into this email from a listener, Terry, who says, my husband and I have been trying to heal our marriage from his sexual addiction, 10 yeah. years of recovery, but he had another backslide about a year ago, and I found out this last October. I'm having a horrible time trusting him. When I see him with women, I wonder if there's something going on with them. Questions: can our marriage heal? What steps can I take to heal it? What steps do we take as a couple? What steps should my beloved husband take? Please, please, please help.
Yes, well, you know, that, you know, one of the things that we are the most challenged by is, you know, desperate calls like this from a wife who has been betrayed now more than once. And I think, you know, one of the things I'm feeling led to say to you is that trust, you know, is something that takes time now to heal and develop. I think a lot of the wives that call or talk to us or counsel with us, you know, they think that, you know, I've got to now trust him again. And, you know, trust is something that's developed over time. And the main thing that will develop trust is if your husband can become and remain a truth teller and check in with you regularly about his purity. And I would encourage you, I don't know, Debbie, my wife, you know, I'm so proud of her for some of the things that she's done. And, of course, she's a wife who's walked this journey with me. She's got a book out there that I think would really be comforting for you called Shattered Vows. Now, is there hope for a marriage? Absolutely. One of the things that's obviously necessary, though, is that your husband get the kind of ongoing help and support that he needs now that he will not have any more relapses. So I think that kind of help is available. That kind of vision is incredibly possible. And I think your marriage can not only survive this, but we believe very profoundly here that marriages who, you know, become better companions and very Christ-centered, you know, those marriages can not only survive, they can thrive. So reach out for help. Look at some of the resources that we have on our website. Call us if you want to. We'd be glad to talk to you.
Thank you for that that email. If you'd like to share an email question or concern or a phone call, it's 877-933-2484, or the email address, it's myfaithradio.com, and then go on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. You can send your question in. It is a challenge, I think, too, for those that maybe are trying to come out of this, a porn addiction of some sort. You know, we'd like immediate change, and the process does take a long time, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, I don't know, several years ago, Neil, I celebrated my 25th anniversary of sobriety, and the most frequently asked question that I got was, you know, how did you do this? You know, do you consider yourself free today? Do you consider yourself delivered today? And, you know, the truth of it is, I do consider myself free. I do consider myself delivered in a way that, you know, I haven't struggled with any kind of sexual sin now for almost 28 years. But the truth is also that I'm still a man living in our current culture. And so my answer to that question, how did you do it, was my answer was by doing the same thing in year 25 that I did in year one. And one of the main things that I did in year one was just to really establish a community of men around me to work a very solid accountability program so that I had men encouraging me, supporting me, getting with me at times when, you know, I felt weak and tempted and that kind of stuff. And I just think that if we can do that in an ongoing way, then we will, in fact, be free of this stuff. I think there are a lot of addicts that are looking for the very quick cure. They're, you know, patience is not one of the virtues of an addict. They're always looking for the quick high, the quick fix. So one of the spiritual things that we're going to have to develop in men that I work with is, you know, a series of patience, waiting on the Lord, you know, believing and trusting in God's timing, developing that network of just honest and energetic men around you that are I think accountability, by the way, Neil, is really a lot more about encouragement than it is about discouragement.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. What does accountability need to include and look like to be effective? Because, I mean, we're good at lying anyway, and particularly if we have a sexual addiction, it seems like we've gotten to be pretty high level of this.
We have a lot of humor around here about, you know, the fact that the men are liars and, you know, what we need to do to become truth tellers. You've allowed me to kind of get at, I think, what is one of the most common mistakes about accountability, and that is, I forget, was it P.T. Barnum who said, you know, you can fool some of the people all of the time, all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. And what I mean by that is that, you know, yes, if I'm in accountability with just one other guy, and I hear that all the time, you know, I have an accountability partner. One guy never works because you can fool him some of the time. I do think that accountability means that we have a group of men around us. We go to groups. We go to support groups. We go to Bible studies. And we are honest enough to tell them about our history, our story. We're honest enough to start talking about our temptations, our vulnerable places. And then now we're going to be talking to these guys on a daily basis. And there's enough guys in this group that they know our lies. They know our weaknesses. They know our vulnerabilities. In my early year, but there were no 12-step groups for sex addiction. So believe it or not, I wound up going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an alcoholic. But those guys knew how to work an honesty program, and they knew how to confront when you were getting into some of your stuff. And so I just firmly believed for years that we have to have a group of probably at least 10 guys that we're talking to regularly. As you know, Neil, I did write one of the books that I've written is called The Seven Principles of Accountability, and it's based on the book of Nehemiah and how to build a strong wall of defense around your life and, you know, practice some of the things that are in there. This principle that I'm just talking about having more than one guy, is based on the second chapter of Nehemiah when the king there gives him permission to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall. Nehemiah is planning to, you know, go by himself and travel 800 miles through, you know, what is today Iraq and Iran, and he's believing that, you know, he's going to be able to get there. Well, verse 9 says, the king also sent with me the army officers and the cavalry. So, you know, if I'm going to make a journey through enemy-occupied territory, and I do believe in satanic oppression, you know, I better have the army with me. So the average Christian man is thinking, you know, first of all, I'm too ashamed to tell anyone about that. That guy's going to get picked off in a heartbeat. The guys that say, I have one accountability partner, well, what happens if the guy is not available at 10 o'clock at night when you're tempted to look at porn? So you better have more than one guy. By the way, I'm into my preaching self now, Neil.
So. you keep on. We're saying amen. You go, brother.
I just think that a cord of, you know, two strands is not broken, but we just need an army of guys around us. That's the central point that I'm trying to make. That's one of the seven principles, by the way.
And one of the, and I know I appreciated your, you know, I haven't really read Nehemiah in the terms of context about how it can help us in our journey toward healing addiction. But, you know, some of the things you talk about is even using times of strength to prepare for times of weakness, just sort of a little bit more about, you know, even as Nehemiah was there building the wall, that there were challenges every day.
Well, you know, there's a thread running through our time together today, and that is that, you know, when Nehemiah first gets back to Jerusalem and they start the building process, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but the city of Jerusalem is lying in ruins for 140 years. There have been previous people who've tried to rebuild this wall, and the enemies around Jerusalem have always come against it. So when Nehemiah gets back there, they don't have any belief that he's going to be any more successful. So they just start taunting and teasing. They don't do anything about it, you know, in terms of aggression. But, you know, in the fourth chapter, when the wall is reaching about half its height, now the enemy said, well, this guy seems to be a lot more successful, so now we're going to come against it militarily. And Nehemiah, knowing this, prepares for the attack. And that is, you know, one of the seven principles. Some guys say, you know, I'm going to call my accountability partner when I get attacked. Way too late. You know, you need to have a plan in place that when the attack comes, and you know it will, then there's automatic things that are going to happen. And we don't have time today for me to fully get into all of that. But every man that I work with has to have a plan that's proactive. So in other words, you know, like when I travel, in the old days when I traveled, Neil, when I first wrote my book and I was out in the speaking circuit, I would call the hotel in advance and have them take the TV out of my room. I just didn't want to see it. I didn't want to be tempted by the stuff that's on it. So, you know, and I would also tell the sponsor of the event that at no time do I want to be left alone, and I don't want to be in my room for any great length of time. You know, even if I'm scheduled to speak from 1 to 5, you know, schedule me for something from 7 to 10 because, you know, I don't want to be sitting around. So, you know, I always had a plan. And that's what I work on a daily basis with here in our counseling centers, to helping guys create a plan for the attack that you know is going to come.
Yeah, we'll talk more and about one of the passions that Dr. Mark Laser is carrying on now. It's about, you know, how do we find those group of guys that can be accountable? Well, it happens when we can have open conversations in the churches, and we'll talk a bit more about that as well. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. Maybe this has sparked something in you. Realize that, you know, this could be the day, a stake in the ground kind of day, when you could turn it around and get some help. Love to have you join the conversation, or your spouse that's caring about a husband, or maybe there's a son or a dad or something you're just wondering about, looking for some advice, some counsel. 877-933-2484 is the phone number, 877-933-FAITH, or again, you can be anonymous, and you can go online and leave a message at myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith Show page and use the email link there. Mark Laser, President Director of Faithful and True, joining us today, and author of several books, including Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction.
Lord, you have my heart, and I will search for you. Jesus, take my life and lead me on.
Well, there's a way, there's a path that can lead us to a life faithful and true. Dr. Mark Laser is passionate about that, and he's been leading the way himself. 27 years of sobriety, as he calls it, from a sexual addiction, and he now directs Faithful and True and hosts the Men of Valor program. It's Faithful and True's online radio show. You can find out more about all his writings and resources at faithfulandtrue.com. He's written a dozen books, including Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction. He and his wife have written together Seven Desires and several others. He's a new one coming out. He's done some seminars called Fight of Your Life. And I know, Mark, one of your passions has to do with getting this conversation much more open in our churches. Say a word about that.
Well, thanks, Neil. Yeah, that is exactly right. After 25-plus years of doing this, one of the things I'm convinced about is that the local church needs to be the primary place where this battle, this fight, this spiritual warfare, where we get help with this. And I've, at this point, Neil, probably talked to well over, personally, face-to-face, 5,000 men who've struggled with this. And one of the consistent themes that I hear is that my father never talked to me about this. My youth pastor never talked about this stuff. They did, it was always, you know, here's what you don't do. I've never really heard effective preaching about this in terms of God's plan for healthy sexuality. And if I'm struggling with this stuff, this is certainly not something I'm going to bring up at my men's Bible study. So now, you know, I want to be fair. I think in the last 5 to 10 years, we're starting to see a lot of pastors open up more about this and that kind of thing. But the vision that we have, I'll be 65 this year, Neil, and I don't plan to retire, by the way. But, you know, this next season of our life, we're just trying to go into local churches and put on events for men on a Saturday morning, kind of like the old Saturday morning men's prayer breakfast idea, to just come and to hear some words of encouragement about accountability and about fellowship and community and, you know, that kind of thing. We did one last Saturday in Phoenix area, and I was really honored when there were some fathers who came with their sons, and several of the boys were 13, 14 years old, and there was a grandfather there with a grandson, and I just think in terms of one of the major ways we confront the depravity of our culture is if, you know, men are willing to stick together in accountability and fellowship, and if fathers are talking to sons, grandfathers are talking to sons, you know, we men need to talk about this a lot more. And the average pastor, I think, you know, in terms of some of the stuff that we have to teach about accountability, I mean, Satan is plucking off pastors right and left. The percentage of pastors that are, you know, experiencing moral failure is increased. You know, so I, you know, our vision, our mission, our energy is being directed toward taking this fight right to the trenches, right to the front ranks of this. And but more than anything else, you know, just opening up the conversation. And then Debbie and I also, we go into churches and do couples workshops where we're hoping that we get couples talking more about this. I mean, the people that are going out there having affairs, you know, generally because, you know, the husband and wife are not talking about their emotions, their needs, their desires, and our culture is actually promoting this kind of sin. So we just feel really called to get in and be a resource so that people can get honest about this stuff, because, as we all know, the truth will set us free.
Anonymous caller asks a straightforward question, one that I know you address in the book, but let's talk about it here in the air. Does the Bible say anything about masturbation? Is that considered sexual impurity?
No. Unfortunately, the Bible really doesn't, but in a way it kind of does. So, you know, I've heard guys try to, you know, relate this back to owning sin and spilling your seed on the ground. I don't think that counts. But I do think Jesus really addresses it in Matthew 5. When he says, if you so much as think lustfully about another woman in your heart, you commit adultery. So I think the thing with masturbation is, and, you know, we all make jokes about it in terms of, you know, 97% of men do it and the other 3% are lying. So, you know, it's a normal developmental thing. But I do think the key to whether masturbation is sinful or whether or not it's spoken about in the Bible is the mechanical act of it is not the problem. It's what's in your mind when you're doing it. So I have, if a man says to me that he can masturbate and not think about anything, I said, you know, are you on medication, drugs, or are you in a coma? Because, you know, in order to achieve an act of masturbation, you have to be thinking about something. Is what you're thinking about righteous or not? You know, and that's the key question, I think.
It goes back to I think Romans 12, which we talked about there at the outset. Yeah. You got a few minutes left. One of the things that I wanted to just have you address in the book, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, you talk about the process of change. And one of the things that the steps in there is chaos. And I'm thinking, well, there's certainly people listening now that, we're doing fine, but then chaos hits. What do we do when chaos comes into the picture?
Well, you know, I try to relate that to the story of the Jews coming out of Egypt. They had to spend a period of time in the desert. It wasn't, you know, straight from across the Red Sea to across the River Jordan into the Promised Land. And I do think that anytime you're making a major change, it's going to feel uncomfortable. One of the things we talk about is the tyranny of the normal. I mean, in that story of the Exodus, how many times did the Jewish people, when they got a little frightened, did they want to go back to Egypt? You know, Egypt was normal. Slavery was normal. So I could go on with that one. That's a whole nother sermon. But I do think if we're going to make a major change, it's going to feel really uncomfortable. It's not normal. One of the guys in my group last night was talking about this. He said, you know, I'm doing so great. My wife and I are experiencing, you know, the one flesh union of our companionship in ways that we've never done. And he was just glowing with how much joy he has. And then he stopped and he said, and it feels so weird. And I said, well, of course it does, because, you know, this kind of connection and this kind of peace is not normal for you. You know, you grew up in a home where, you know, you were physically and sexually abused. So, you know, all of this stuff is not normal. God promises you that this is going to become the new normal, but you may have to go through a period of time where it just feels awkward. Trust that it feels awkward and trust that that's good. And we just call that sometimes about a year or so of chaos that you're going to have to go through when you get sexual purity.
Is chronic depression a symptom? I mean, is that kind of a warning sign? I mean, certainly isolation becomes a real issue, doesn't it?
Well, sure. And chronic depression can be a symptom of so many other things. But it's not uncommon for the men that we deal with to be chronically depressed and to be using the neurochemistry of sexual arousal is one of the ways they medicate that depression. I think a lot of our men are guilty of practicing pharmacology without a license, Neil, meaning that they're using the adrenaline, the dopamine of sexual arousal, the medicative variety of mental health issues.
We've got about 2 minutes left. We'll just give you a chance to maybe just say some final comments, maybe words of hope, encouragement. What would that be?
Well, you know, we were talking about it earlier, Neil, that I think it seems like one of the themes today was the satanic oppression. So even as we've been on the air today, I'm guessing that Satan has been lobbing lies into the minds of some of the listeners that there is no hope, there is no way out, God does not have a plan to prosper me and not harm me. And I'm thinking about the wife who called in, that there is no hope for our marriage. I just want to speak against that, Neil. That's a lie. There is hope. There is a way out. The key to all of this, I think, is one of Satan's lies is that we can't talk about this. We cannot open up about this, because if we start talking about our stories, you know, people will reject us and run and scream out of the room. I've told my story now hundreds of times. I have never had that happen. Every time I've gotten honest about my story, I've always found fellowship, always found at least one other brother. And I just want to encourage all the listeners that if you're struggling with any of these issues, any of this stuff is in your family, talk to somebody. The greatest enemy of sexual health is silence. So well, I could repeat that again, Neil, but that's basically the message that I would leave the listeners with.
Yeah, we were going to spend some time praying, but I think maybe we'll do that actually as our show wraps up here. Our time is getting away from us and don't really have time for a 30-second prayer. But let me just say to those listening that we do care about your spiritual and physical and emotional and sexual health. And our thoughts and prayers are with you today. And we'll Mark and I will just take a little moment here at the end before when the show is over here just to pray for you today. Thank you for listening. Dr. Mark Laser joining us today. Find out more about his speaking and writing at the website faithfulandtrue.com. And if you want to pass this show on to a friend, it's all shareable. You can go to the podcast at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith.